Welcome to Talking with the Source, where we bring on well-known and local researchers from around the world to share their experiences and evidence.
Who knows that the moon missions were faked?
As soon as I said, I'll meet you, and she said, oh, darn it, I gotta check the door, make sure the door's locked, because I don't want to leave John's house unlocked. So she goes back to check the door. I go out to my vehicle, and I hear this god-awful scream.
Well, there are 63 races of grays. So most people only think there's one race, and when you say grays, it's a misinformation. There are 63 races. Out of those, one race is a negative extraterrestrial. And what I do is I group them in the negative and the positive. The positive wish to see humanity ascend.
What is your name? My name is Anthony.
The mysteries of this podcast. Join us only on Talking with the Source, live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and on all podcast listening platforms.
What is going on, everybody? My name is AJ Capasso, host of Talking with the Source. I'm here with one of my best friends, Chris. What is up, my friend? How have you been?
I've been wonderful. Been a long week, but wonderful.
Great, great. Well, we are missing one of our friends, John, JK47. He is not here right at the moment. He's with his family out in the Colorado Springs having a great time this weekend. So we just wish him the best. We love him. We miss him. And we can't wait to have him back next week. But thank you guys all for tuning in. Today we have an absolutely amazing guest. I've been waiting for him to come on. If you have ever watched Netflix, go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying hi to Nicole. I saw her pop on.
Oh, hey, Nicole. How are you? I wanted to say that if you ever seen the Netflix docuseries Surviving Death, then you would see his episode and see him in the episode on episode 4. And his name is Robert Ginsburg or Bob Ginsburg. And he is actually the founder and vice president of the family. Or let me pull it up right now, actually, on the banner here so you guys can see it for yourselves. It is the ForeverFamilyFoundation.org, and also his blog is www.beyondthefivesenses.com. So let me bring forward Robert Ginsburg right now. Hey, Bob, how are you?
Okay. Hi, AJ. Hi, Chris.
Hey.
How have you been?
Hey, Bob.
I'm good. Thanks for inviting me on.
Yeah, make him the big screen. He's the guest.
He gets the big screen. No, thank you so much for coming on. I mean, it's honestly an honor, and I'm so looking forward to diving deep into your story and finding out more about you. Obviously, we got to learn a little bit about you on the docuseries, but I wanted to find out a little bit more. I wanted to first give you my condolences. I know that there was a loss that you had that came before this and everything that was in your description that you sent me and stuff. So I wanted to just give you the condolences of the loss and give us, you know, the prayers to your family and you. But if you could, can you tell the viewers a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, well, you know, AJ, who I am now is quite different than who I was before 2002. I mean, I was, like a lot of people, I was like a soul. A logical left brain materialist thinker. The thought of life after death to me, it was a fairy tale. I didn't believe in, paranormal experiences. You know, to my credit, I wasn't a total skeptic. I was open-minded, but, an open-minded skeptic.
Yeah.
And then like many people, after you suffer a tragedy, it's like a catalyst to exploration because you're searching for some meaning or, you know, a purpose or answers. Yes. And that's what happened with me. I had on the morning of September 1st, 2002, my wife, like sat up in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, like shaking and trembling. And I said, what's the matter? And she couldn't even talk. I said, what's the matter? And finally she said, something horrible is going to happen today. And I said, well, you know, what can, do you have any details? What does that mean? And she said, I can't tell you, but our lives are going to be changed forever today. And even though I didn't really so-called believe in this stuff, like
yeah,
of experiences or visions or whatever, there were many times in our lives together where she had similar experiences. They were all good things, but they all played out exactly the way she said they were going to.
Wow.
Logic told me that if she was right then, she could be right now. And so I did what most parents would do. I took tabs on my three children throughout the day. One was already back at college. My oldest one, I was going to try back the next day. And my youngest daughter was working one last day at a part-time job before high school started again. And to make a long story short, I let my guard down at the end of the day. I let it hurt this experience like fade from my awareness. Yeah. Four of us were in a restaurant together. I let my son and my daughter take one car home. And I said to get ready for school the next day. We lived in a rural area, and we passed them, and they were in a horrible accident. My daughter didn't survive the accident, and my son had serious, you know, brain injuries. And I was in shock for a long time. But then it became clear that my son was going to recover from his injuries. And then suddenly I remembered that day, like that morning, like,
wow.
Obsessed with finding out how my wife knew, because there was no doubt that she did.
Yeah.
So I took the science route, and I started contacting people and traveling across the United States, meeting with medical doctors and scientists and researchers that studied the mind, that studied consciousness, because I needed to know if there was any credible evidence that our minds or our consciousness or our soul could extend, you know, beyond the physical brain. And the more I learned, you know, of course, the more questions I had. But I just couldn't believe that the mainstream wasn't aware, you know, of all that evidence. And
yeah,
one thing led to another. And, you know, it's fast forward, you know, 22 years. And, you know, we started Forever Family Foundation in 2003. And it's grown to, you know, 15,000 members. And there are just so many people that are interested in these things. And it's not only the majority of probably people that have lost loved ones, but now the people my age, the baby boomers, are starting to question their own mortality for the first time.
Because we're getting
closer, you know, like, is there anything to it? You know, is it just wishful thinking?
Yeah. So
the curious is starting to join to learn.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, if you don't mind me asking, through your research and going across the United States and meeting with all these different scientists about consciousness and everything, what did you find out? What was your end result of, or, well, actually, I shouldn't say what's your end result, because it gives you more questions than answers. I know that. But what was some of your results that you would say that you've gotten from some of these answers?
Well, you know, in order to believe in life after physical death, the prerequisite is that you first have to believe that our minds can travel beyond our brains. So things like telepathy, intuition, distant healing, remote viewing. I mean, you're probably aware, I don't know if your audience is aware of remote viewing. You know, so, you know, people, for lack of a better description, are able to send their consciousness to a distant site, view that site. Our own government enlisted remote viewers in the 60s with the Cold War with the Russians. They give them latitude and longitude coordinates, and they would visit like secret sites and draw accurate drawings. So things like that. I mean, I did my own experiment, remote viewing experiment, where I told our members that every night at exactly 9 p.m. Eastern, I was going to draw a picture. And between the, you know, 9 p.m. and 9:15 p.m. And I told people to join in, whether they thought they had any ability or not. and at the end of 5 days, physically mail me in their drawings to see if anything matched. And people started, sending in their drawings. And frankly, I wasn't impressed. It was really nothing that.
Yeah.
Then I got one.
Weren't even close.
Yes, I could stretch it, but I don't do that. So I said, no, it was nothing. But the very last came in, the woman 3,000 miles away in Bend, Oregon, nailed three of the pictures exactly. And
wow.
On Friday, I said, you know what? I'm going to screw with everybody. I'm not going to draw a picture. I'm going to draw a geometric shape. And I drew a dot with concentric circles around it.
Yeah. You drew it?
You drew it exactly the way I drew it. Now, the interesting thing is I drew it on Friday, but she drew it on Wednesday. You know, so it raises the issue of, you know, who was remote viewing who. And also,
right.
You know, time and distance, you know, really don't matter when it comes to
premonitions.
You know, so that had a profound effect on me because here I am, you know, Bob, sitting in New York, where I lived at the time, with my brain and my skull. And then this woman 3,000 miles away with her brain and her skull. If our brain produces consciousness, how is that possible? It's not, you know. So it's clearly that something was moving beyond the brain. So things like that spurred me on to then investigate things like near-death experiences and reincarnation and deathbed visions, you know, after-death communications, electronic voice phenomena, all these other things, because, okay, now I was already sold that intuition and mind-acting in the way of the brain was real. So that's what we try to do in the foundation. We don't try to convince anybody. We just want to make them aware of the established evidence.
Wow. Yeah. No, you know what? That's very important too. I mean, I'm so shocked that the lady drew it on Wednesday and then you drew it on Friday. That is just absolutely incredible because, you know, it's weird. When I had my near death experience, I felt obviously that no time and distance, like you said, mattered. Obviously there was no time in the afterlife. And I also felt that we were all one, so we're all connected in some way. So I feel that consciousness definitely was connected with you in some way, and she was able to remote view you or you remote view her or whatever it may be. But that was intense. That's pretty cool to like get somebody to send that to you.
I think there was. So in your own NDE, I mean, you described two things that a lot of other people describe. I mean, did you leave your body and have a
So what ended up happening was I was addicted to opiates at the time. I was a heroin addict and I died 12 times. And the last time that I died, I left my body. And when I left my body, the paramedics were, I remember just waking up over my body, like floating kind of, but standing, it felt like. And I was looking down at the paramedics working on my body. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on? And I was able to basically view around the room just by thought wherever I wanted to be simultaneously all at the same time. So if I wanted to be over his shoulder, in his thoughts, on the other side of the room, looking over my thing, I could do all of them at the same time, but understand each one simultaneously. And then I felt some other presence, but I couldn't see anybody with me. And then I got sucked up what I would call like hyperspace tube is what the way that I can describe it. And I started to get very fast images of it wasn't just my life review. It was beginning of creation to the end of my life. Wow. And the pictures came up so quickly, but I was able to understand them, each and every one, like as if it was like listening to a CD, like in the physical where we can only listen to one track at a single time. But in this instance, you're able to listen to all 12 tracks simultaneously at the same time and understand everything all at once. So it was so magical. And then it opened up into the most beautiful, beautiful place in the entire world. It reminded me of an earth that was like not touched by human beings, with just magical forest, and the colors were just vibrant. I mean, just that everything was so different. Like nothing here matched what was there. It was just so beautiful, the feeling of love. And then I got approached by this light being, and I couldn't look into the light. It was just so bright. And I heard telepathically a deep voice say to me, you're here again. It's not your time. It's time for you to leave. And before I can ask anything, it was just boom. I was sucked back down this hyperspace tube. And that was when the paramedics hit me with the paddles. And I literally sat up and I was screaming, where am I? Where am I? And they were trying to lay me down. And I told them what they were talking about. And then they shut up. They were all scared. But they were like, oh, no, it's just the drugs. Like, just calm down. And they tried to play it off, obviously. But it scared the daylights out of me. And I from that point on, it ended up helping me save my life from drugs and all that kind of stuff and led me down this path of paranormal research. So, but yeah, it was a very, very crazy experience that I'll never forget.
Yeah. Wow. You really had a classic NDE with so many of the common components.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like textbook, you know, but yeah. I could just imagine. So the near-death experience was the first thing that I studied. And it was so compelling in terms of being evidential, because in a near-death experience, you meet every definition that medical science has for death. I mean, you have no brain waves, you have no heartbeat, you have no respiration, you have no reflexes. So medical science is you're dead. And then what do you experience? Clear and logical thinking.
Clear. Many people
describe, you know, clearer than
when I'm now.
So how is that possible? How do you, and how it's possible is because your consciousness was shed of the restrictive, dense physical body. So to me, that was the first step. I think it's still amazingly evidential of the things we're talking about.
You know what's weird? Sorry, Chris, hold on one second. You just said something that made me think of something about my, what made me feel like was that my consciousness merged back into another part of my consciousness to make me fuller is what it made it feel to make me, if that's how the clearer thinking felt, like then how I feel now. I felt like there was more of me when I was out of the body than when I was in, if that kind of makes sense, like the consciousness part, you know?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we're one fragment of a greater part, you know?
Yeah.
Some people are spiritual. Right. People would say, well, there's an oversoul. But, you know, a question that we get a lot when you study reincarnation is a lot, especially people that have lost loved ones. They say, well, I don't want my loved one to reincarnate because that means I'll never be able to communicate with them again.
Yeah,
that's not the way it works, because with a component of many, many different fragments that you can communicate, you know, with simultaneously, you know. I mean, there have been cases of people, they're in the ambulance, you know, being transported to the hospital in an emergency, they're having an NDE, they're at the roof of the ambulance looking down at their body, as you described.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they see the family that's already gathered at the emergency room, you know, at the hospital. So that they're you could just be many places at once, as you described. Yeah.
It's absolutely shocking. Go ahead, Chris.
No, that's exactly what I was going to say is like, to me, I've never had a near death, but it always seems like those that have always say they can go above and connect with like everything. And I don't know how to describe what I want to go from there, but yeah.
Like, you know, I'm big into science myself, and I try to, like with my paranormal research, I try not to do what I call the folklore stuff, where bringing up biblical stuff or bringing up, you know, sacred text type stuff like that. I try to look at it in a scientific view, like quantum mechanics or quantum physics, stuff like that, where we're learning about, you know, frequency, vibration, and you know, electricity, all that type of stuff, that we're energy, all that type of stuff, just like Nikola Tesla said. And, you know, it's just, I'm learning more and more, and it's just, it's so true. It really is that there is this source of energy that we are all connected to, that we are all one part of, I believe, from my experience that I had. And, you know, that whatever spirit or whatever light being that I saw, I believe that that was the source of energy that we come from, is what it felt like. Cause it felt like something that, it felt like I was at home, and it felt like I didn't want to leave. And this, you know, being felt like something that I knew, something that was familiar to me, but I obviously couldn't see the form of it. It was just energy. It was so, you know, it's weird to think about.
Yeah. You know, when I first thought of this work, I always thought that, you know, science and spirituality were, the two were diverse and mutually exclusive, and, you know, but over the years I've talked to many physicists And if I close my eyes, I could swear that I'm talking to a spiritualist, because essentially, about the same thing. Same point of light, the Big Bang, we're all connected, quantum entanglement, it's the same thing, we're using different terms,
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Absolutely,
You know, it's funny because I do a lot of spirit communication work, and the spirits come through, and I, I talk to what they call themselves as my guides. And I talk to them and I ask them, well, does it matter what we call you, like guardian angels, angels, whatever? And they say, no, it doesn't matter what you call us. It doesn't matter to us what it is. You know, we are just energy. We're here to assist you in your life path and your journey of whatever this may be. And I found that so fascinating when it came through the box, because it was like, it made complete sense. Like, you know, we have all these different religions that have all different types of names for, say, demons or angels and all this type of stuff. And, you know, what, it doesn't matter what we call it. It all really is the same kind of conscious energy that wherever it comes from, you know. But I mean, from your research, what have you found, like, for yourself? I mean, what is, have you found any significant things that have lined up in patterns, like synchronicities, that you said, like, this is probably a definite answer for this? Or have you still been led to just more questions?
Yeah, well, you know, we're interested on how all these things affect one's grief, you know, and we because that's the most helpful thing that we do. And we hold these four grief retreats in the United States per year, one of which was shown on that Netflix series that you mentioned. But having a profound personal experience, and it doesn't have to be a full-blown near-death experience, it could be a very evidential reading with a medium, it could be a dream visitation, it could be, you know, many different non-physical experiences can sort of flip the way you think about death. And there have been many scientific studies that have been published in peer-reviewed journals that study grief, and they all indicate that those who believe in life after death do better in their grief than those who don't. And that makes sense, right? Because
it does
give you any more hope or comfort than the knowledge that your loved one still exists in some form. Not only do they exist, but they exist with personality and memories intact. So now, you know, we try to, we've observed that over the years, and some people like me and probably like you, I took the science end of it because things were happening all around me, synchronicity, science, but it didn't fit my frame of reference. So I wouldn't even recognize it or acknowledge it. Yeah. But then after I took the science route, that opened me up to start receiving these things because I believed it. And,
and I think there's, too.
I think there's a progression. I think that when they do these surveys today and they ask people how many people believe in life after death, there's usually the majority, somewhere anywhere between 60 and 70% say that they do believe it. But I think what they're really saying is that they hope. You know, that may be based upon their religious convictions, maybe cultural influences, but or just, you know, it's a nice, a comforting thing to think of. But sometimes that hope turns into belief. And then if you have an experience such as what you had, AJ, that belief turns into a knowing.
A knowing,
You have no doubt. It removes all doubt, you know.
Yeah, it and does.
It took me 7 years to get to that point. Because I, you know, I tried to rule out physical explanations first, you know, and when I finally became convinced by the evidence, that's when things started to unfold. That's helped me personally, you know, to get through, you know, the loss of my daughter and more recently, you know, the loss of my wife.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
Sorry, man.
Thanks. So, I was in a different place, you know, when my daughter passed in, you know, 22 years ago, I'd go to sleep every night wishing that I would die. I mean, I was hoping I'd have a heart attack and not wake up because I couldn't see any way. I didn't believe in life after death. I didn't see any way surviving. Now that my wife passed, I mean, it hurts just as much. I mean, we've married for 46 years, but I don't wish, you know, I'm leading a meaningful and productive life. I know what lies ahead. I know that she's managed to, you know, to see my daughter again.
Yeah.
And I'm better able to keep going with my life. And I think that's the advantage about learning about all these things, you know.
Definitely, definitely. And I'm sure that it helps too with the amount of people that you help with these retreats and you see the difference in them. I'm sure that that gives you that purpose again to be able to, you know, get through those grief times when you do are alone and you do get kind of in your head. And, you know, because I've had those moments. I lost my whole family in 2020, tragically, heart attack with cancer, and then COVID knocked out the rest of everybody it took like 5 months. Everybody was gone. The only one left is my aunt and my mom. And it's like, it's crazy. It's crazy that I was going to bed the same way you were, like mad, like just didn't want to live, didn't want to wake up. But, you know, I also had that knowing, and I'm like, you know what, why am I sitting here like this? Because it's not doing any good for me. And I know that they wouldn't want me to be this way either. So, right.
Yeah, you know. I mean, I know exactly how you mean. You know, when you suffer personal loss like you and I have, and many people have, it kind of strips you down to nothing, you know, and you got to build yourself up, and you build yourself up like you did after your NDEs, you know, with a different perspective. I live on a barrier island, and almost 2 years ago, the whole island was underwater when a hurricane hit.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
And I had massive damage. I had 6 feet of water in my house, you know, so.
Wow.
But then, and I'm a guy that usually has a lot of stress. So I hold it in, but people would look at me, you know, as I was dealing through this, and they said, well, I don't understand how you're so calm through this. I said, because I have the luxury of perspective. I said, this is material shit.
Yeah.
This is, you want to know what loss is? I'll tell you what loss is, you know?
Exactly.
I give everything I ever owned for 10 more minutes with my daughter, you know? So that's one, I hate to use the term advantage, but it is an advantage.
It is.
You get to live your life as if it's your last day, which allows you to live a fuller life, because we know that what's here today may not be there tomorrow.
You're right. Absolutely right. You're right. And it is all material shit. You're absolutely right. You know, and a lot of us cling to that material life, and you know, we can't bring anything with us when we leave. So it's like, why do we do that? You know, but I guess it's part of being human, you know, and we get wrapped up in our worldly possessions. But I want you to talk a little bit about the Forever Family Foundation and a little bit about what else you guys do. And then we'll talk a little bit about your blog. But first, I know we were talking about the retreats you guys obviously do. If you want to get a little bit into the retreats, tell the viewers a little bit about them.
Yeah, so we do these retreats. We've been doing them for many, many years. And we present, most people that come to the retreats are grieving the loss of a loved one. Some might be fresh, some may be years. Some people come back because they need a little refresher to get them back on track. But we approach it, we have four mediums that have been certified by the foundation. We have a grief clinical professor of psychology who's an expert, you know, in grief, and she's wonderful. She comes to all our retreats. We have metaphysical practitioners. I usually give a talk about, from a science perspective, about evidence of an afterlife. And we want to, you know, meditation, and we want to expose them to everything, hoping that they'll come away with something that will help them, you know, in their journey. And those have been tremendously effective. As a matter of fact, there are two scientific studies going on that are measuring the effects of that the retreats have on somebody's grief, and, you know, that still
right. And how do we find that? So, like, if I wanted to go to one, how do I get a hold of that?
It's all on the website. We post them, foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Since we limit them to 50 people at each retreat,
they
sell out very quickly, you know, so sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. And where are the retreats at?
We have.
I know you mentioned Connecticut, but.
Yeah, we have them in Connecticut, Florida, California, and Yeah, when, that's what I'm. Yeah, we have two in Florida, one in Connecticut, one in California. I mean, we could do okay. more, but there's just so much we could handle. You know?
I don't blame you. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I can imagine how much it is. Yeah, to put all that together and everything, and yeah, Nicole, very sorry for your loss as well, Nicole.
Yes, Nicole, absolutely.
And I also want to say thank you to our new guest right now who's watching from Iraq, Zagros. Thank you so much for coming and thank you for praying for us all. We pray for you and your wife as well. We hope that you can get her over or you can come over to the States with her, as I saw in the comments. But thank you for joining us and thank you for listening to this podcast. But yeah, I mean, I think what you're doing is absolutely amazing work. And I think that, you know, helping people through these times with all of the different aspects that you guys put together with the foundation is just such an amazing thing. Now, when you give them, like, have you ever heard of binaural beats?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, this was many years ago, but the director of the Monroe Institute at the time came to one of our conferences, and actually we had these huge speakers and he demonstrated the binaural beats for the whole, you know, the whole crowd.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So that could be, we want to teach people that they can tap into these non-physical sources on their own. They don't necessarily need a medium to do it for them.
Yes.
We're treating them different issues. You know, you might find this interesting, but I once did a survey where I asked people, given the choice, would you rather communicate with your deceased loved one directly or through the services of a medium? Now, when I devised that question, I was positive that most people would say, I would rather, you know, get information with them directly. Isn't that what you would think?
Yeah, that's what I would think. Yeah. Right. But it was the opposite, right?
It was the opposite. And then, so that started me to thinking, like, why? So I started asking questions. There were two reasons. One, we still live in a world where we're taught to fear things that we can't perceive with our known physical senses.
Yeah.
So there's some fear involved in that whole thing. And two, a lot of people said that if I get the communication directly, I'm going to question whether it's my own mind that's making this up, as opposed to getting it through a so-called professional and a medium.
That's what I was going to say, the professional thing.
Like, yeah, so,
you don't paint your own house, you hire somebody to paint it. You don't want to communicate to the spirit, you hire the medium.
Yeah. So I could see both points of view. You know, once, many, many years ago, there was a woman at one of our grief retreats, and I had a private conversation with her because she was distraught. And I said, what would it take for you to get to that knowing stage that your daughter still exists in spirit form?
Yeah. Just,
you know what, Bob? If I could see my daughter, that would remove all doubt. And
yes,
about 10 years went by and she showed up at another retreat 10 years later. Wow. And she came up to me and she said, do you remember that conversation we had? And honestly, I didn't, you know, and then she refreshed my memory. And she said, well, I saw my daughter. She said, you know, I woke up and my daughter was standing at the foot of the bed and I could see her, you know, clearly. And I said, what happened? And she said, it scared the crap out of me. And I screamed and then my daughter disappeared. And I'm like, my God, like, what a shame. Your daughter figures out how to harness energy and manifest to visit you. And then, and you scare her away, you know, she came out.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't put it that way, but.
No, but that's the,
right.
That's what I'm thinking, because that's, you know, that's what society does to us and the media and films. And
yes.
Yeah. Fear
it instead of embrace it. It's the same way that children, it's uncanny how many children have these abilities because
it's amazing.
They haven't been taught that it's not right, you know, and parents, they don't know how to handle it. And very often they take their kid to a psychologist who all too often gives them medication, you know, instead of embracing and having a conversation with them about what they saw as if it is something natural, because it is. So it's a shame. And we're trying to open up minds and getting people to share their experiences, because once they talk about things, it becomes more and more acceptable in the mainstream and people don't have that fear of being labeled or judged by discussing it.
You know? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That is, you know, that's absolutely amazing. And I, going back to what I was saying about the binaural beats, I was going to ask if you guys ever use that in your meditation sessions, like after you, the Monroe Institute person came to your thing. Have you ever used that in your, any of your meditations?
My wife and I, you know, tried it a few times. You know, we haven't done it other than that one time at the retreat. And I'm such a poor meditator, AJ. I got to tell you, my chatter just never stops. So.
Oh yeah, me too.
I didn't get a lot, you know, out of it, but there are people that do, and I'm for it because it gets your mind in that altered state of consciousness, and that's when communication takes place.
I use it a lot, and I tell you, I work with people, and first person that I worked with to help grow his connection with spirit is our other host John, who's not with us right at the moment. He couldn't make it today, but since he started doing these binaural beats and meditation and stuff, he has grown his connection and is able to get through a regular spirit box, literally sentences. And he helps with missing cases and with law enforcement and stuff like that. And he's actually getting answers to old cold cases that like people are, the detectives are like, how are you even getting this? There's no possible way. And to watch it grow and watch him grow through meditation and through these binaural beats, getting into this altered consciousness, has been such a feat to watch since I do it myself, and I got to train someone, and he was a total non-believer in it in the beginning. And now he's the total opposite, you know, like all the
his
stuff.
His growth is amazing.
Yeah, it's absolutely amazing. So I think there definitely is a lot to it, you know, and like I said, going back to everything with, you know, quantum physics and mechanics and stuff, how the frequency, vibration, and energy is like what Nikola Tesla said, is the three things. If you could figure those things out, or you would find out the secrets of the universe. And I believe that to be really true, really true. And
we kind of discover all sorts of modalities that we tell people about. I don't know if you've ever heard of induced after-death communication. There's a psychologist, you know, Dr. Alan Botkin. He used to work with war veterans that had PTSD, and he would use EMDR, which is a form, as you know, of, you know, brain entrainment. And it's now becoming a very acceptable mainstream, you know, type of therapy. But by accident, treating one of his patients, he didn't do it intentionally, but he added a few different eye movement exercises, and all of a sudden the veteran started talking to a deceased person. And Dr. Botkin, he didn't believe in life after death, so he thought it was an anomaly. But it was so compelling that he replicated what he did by mistake with another patient, and that patient is talking to the deceased person. He tried it after he did it three times. He gave the procedure to several of his colleagues to get independent verification. And they tried it, and they were getting the same results. You know, so we still don't know how it works, but in a large percentage of people, I would say somewhere around 50 to 60% of the people that he tries it with, and there are many different sessions that you do, they have these full-blown experiences, you know, of talking to the deceased. Now, that's really attractive to a lot of people, because it's something that if you can be induced, to do it instead of doing it on your own, that's something to explore. I never got a chance to do it myself, but a lot of people that I know, you know, have. Some with good results and some
that's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Now, do you believe, I don't know if you believe this or not, I'm not sure where you stand on this, but do you believe that, I just totally lost my train of thought. Wow. Good. I had a question. Go ahead, Chris, you ask a question. I gotta think of this, because it was a good one, and I just lost my train of thought. Dang it.
So when the person is doing that last exercise, is it because like all their, I don't know, energies and vibes all light up and they can kind of like the near-death experiencing where they project up into the...
I don't know. You know, there are a lot of scientists that we work with that do brain studies on people that are intuitive. You know, they hook them up to EEGs and, you know, when they do MRI imaging. Yeah. And they look for areas in the brain that light up or go dark when somebody's engaged in these type of intuitive experiences, whether it be spirit communication or, you know, psychic exercises. And there are definitely patterns. And that's cool because if we can isolate the mechanism by which this happens, then we might be able, as a people, to be able to communicate.
So like one part of that brain like works when you're like talking to like spirit or whatever then, or source?
Yeah, certain
parts.
Okay,
cool.
You know, there's, we all have, when I say we, all human beings.
I've never thought of that.
And plants and animals have this substance called DMT, pineal glands, you know, in our brains. Yeah. You know, it is psychoactive substance. And I've interviewed several people, such as Dr. Rick Strassman, who wrote the book, The DMT Molecule.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and it started to dawn on me during our conversation. Everything has a purpose, right?
Yeah.
So what is the purpose of all life to have this psychoactive experience in our bodies? I mean, it has to serve some purpose. And maybe that purpose is when it's released to provide that connection to the non-physical realms, you know?
So there you go.
That stuff's really fascinating to me.
All right. I remember my question now because you reminded me now. So do you think that we can train these senses that are more than just our five senses? Do you think any person can train themselves to become, say, a medium, or to at least talk to the afterlife? Because in a way I do, but in a way it's like a fine line. I believe it depends on the person and how much they're willing to open up. That's my opinion. But what have you learned?
What I would say is that every one of us has intuitive ability in various degrees. You know, I mean, some people could play chopsticks on the piano, but they're not going to be putting on any concerts, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
In that sense, it's an ability. Now, there are like intuitive development and mediumship development courses that you could take. But I believe that if you're not born with this really strong ability, that is only, you can only go so far. You never can be a top level, you know, evidential medium. I have seen people with some good ability that have been able to enhance it and are very good mediums today. However, in talking, let's say, with the 27 mediums that we've certified over the past 20 years, they all had these abilities as children. They repressed it because they didn't know how to integrate it into their lives. You know, they were somewhat fearful, and it didn't come to the forefront until they became adults. But they all had these strong abilities, you know, at a young age.
Yeah.
So, I think that I encourage people to take, you know, mediumship development courses or psychic development courses.
So, kind of like playing sports. Then the more you use it, the better you get at it.
I think so too. I mean,
it's like a muscle. Yeah.
I mean, I played. Yeah. I played baseball, you know, up until, you know, high school, and always had dreams of being in the major leagues, but that
didn't happen. Yeah. No, I mean, obviously people's levels are all different, you know.
Yeah.
Not everyone's going to make it pro, but.
Now, what is your theory on why that is? And the reason why I ask this is because my theory is, I think that some people, like when we go back to consciousness energy and how part of the consciousness, I believe, is not obviously our full consciousness is not all the way in this body. I'm wondering, this is just a theory, but I'm wondering if the people that come that really do have a very strong ability, that really are mediums that come from a young age, that come in, what if their consciousness energy is, there's more of their conscious energy that has entered the body than what, say, just the average person would have that doesn't have just the abilities normally, like as strong as a normal person who just like can see here, whatever, like a really, really good, you know, real medium. Do you think that the conscious energy can do that, since we found out through science that obviously the brain is a filter, you know, for our consciousness and stuff? Do you think that that's possible, or what have you learned throughout your studies?
Yeah, well, I agree with the brain as a filter model, and, you know, and that's the reason why, for instance, so the most common form of after-death communication are dream visitations, because that that monkey mind is put at rest, and the person in spirit, the person of pure energy, has, sees a conduit, sort of like a beam of light, you know, where they can come through and get to, you know, I have very little intuitive ability, but at least when I'm conscious. But when I'm unconscious, for instance, I had 74 dream visitations from my daughter over a period of 4 or 5 years. Wow. And I journaled, you know, each one of them.
I was about to ask that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also had other deceased people, some I knew and some I didn't at the time, come through. But when I'm awake, I'm useless, you know. Somehow I think that when we're able to get out of the way and put that filter aside, amazing things can happen. Also, sometimes, as you probably know, somebody in spirit may be trying to get through a message through to me while I'm awake, and they just can't do it. But they know they could come to AJ, and AJ is going to get that message to me. They see channels and pathways that we don't. And we see that all the time, you know. We even see that with EVP, you know. There are people that get these voices, it's happened to me personally, that I didn't understand, you know, the message or who that could be, but I later found out it was for somebody else that I knew.
Wow. That's amazing. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah. That's crazy.
So we're using the telegraph, and they're using cell phones, basically.
Right. No, that's absolutely wild. You know, I love the way that you study everything with the science and everything like that. Now, have you got into astral projection and stuff like that with, like, say, how the Monroe Institute, have you studied stuff like that as well?
Yeah, I mean, and that's nothing new. You know, there have been books written about that.
Yeah.
You know, going back, you know, over 100 years of people, you know, leaving their body. We know that, you know, out-of-body experiences are usually a component of near-death experiences, but a lot of people, as you said, can do astral projection and leave their body when they're not, you know, you know, close to death. You know, there's a famous researcher named Charles Tart. He used to do dream studies, and he used to hook people up to EEGs while they're dreaming and monitor them. And what he did with one, in one case, the woman was dreaming, but before she went to sleep, he told her that he had like a 9-foot-tall bookcase in the office, and he wrote a 5-digit number, a random 5-digit number on a piece of paper, and then put it on the top of the bookcase. She was lying on a bed, and he asked her, since she seemed to be able to leave her body at will, to rise up and see the number. And much to his great amazement, she did, you know, a random 5-digit number, because she said she was above the ceiling and she looked down. So I don't know how that happens, you know, but it does.
You know, it's crazy you said that, because there's a doctor that I saw on the news that is actually doing studies right now where he's had cardiac arrest patients that have left their body that have float above. So what he does during like certain procedures is he'll put a pan, and then put a picture that's above where nobody could see it. So if the person does leave their body, if they see that image,
he's been
getting people to actually come back and tell them the image. I find that so fascinating. So there's got to be so much more to life than we even can imagine. You know,
his name is Sam Parnia, and he works out of Stony Brook University. And he does this. It was like a 3-year study. You know, results, but there were people that, you know, were able to do it. So I mean, these are traditionally trained medical doctors. People of science. That are just going where the evidence leads, you know, and they're very brave. We have a lot of them on our board. you know, these medical doctors, because these are things that they had to do for many years in secret, you know, because for fear of ruining their academic and medical careers.
Yeah. I mean, just like the neurologist that was on the docuseries with you, I think he was, a neurologist or a neurochemist. He was on, then he passed away and had that near-death experience. That was fascinating to see him come back and be a not believer at all, and then all of a sudden come back and like write down things and everything. I mean, it was fascinating to see. But what I wanted to ask you was, have you noticed anything in your research about people who come back that they end up coming back with certain abilities? Because I've noticed for myself, when I came back, I've been able to feel, see, and hear spirit or energy, I should say, very easily. Like, I'm very sensitive to energy. I can walk into a room and I can tell you what everybody's feeling. It's the weirdest thing. Mm-hmm. And I mean, have you had that happen in your studies?
Absolutely. It's a core component that many NDEers report. They come back with greatly enhanced intuitive abilities, much as you described. It happens a great percentage of the time. I don't know why. You know, maybe it's because you've already been in that realm of thought. You know,
yeah,
that's what I was going to say, and that's what I said last week too. AJ, is I think they break that veil, or that realm, and so now their mind's free. They no longer have that door to kick down every time they want to reach out or fill, or, and it might just be automatic for some people like it is for you.
Yeah. So AJ, when you got resuscitated, were you pissed off that you had to come back?
Oh, I was very mad. I was very mad. Yes. I was very mad. First, I was very confused, but then when I found out, like when I got to the hospital and I found out what had happened, I literally ripped everything out of my arms and I left the hospital. I walked out. I was so angry because I was like, and I actually punched my father who saved me, because I was pissed off at him. I'm like, why did you bring me back here? You know what I'm saying? I didn't want to come back. Like, cause what I felt there was, I felt it was home. It didn't feel like home when I came back anymore, you know? So it was weird. It took a long time for that residue to leave me and make this feel home again. And even now I don't feel like I'm home anymore, you know? So it's a real weird feeling. It really is.
You know, as I mentioned, we do retreats in Connecticut. I know.
Yeah,
you're in that area.
Yes, I live in Durham, actually, in Middletown.
I should, if you're willing, I should invite you to speak at one of our.
I would love to
retreats.
That'd be so awesome.
Because, you know, that could be really helpful to people. All the things that you've been talking about, to know that there's a place we go, and that's where the loved ones are. So I have to talk to you about that.
No, definitely. Let's talk after this. Yeah, for sure. No, thank you for even asking. That's so weird that you asked that question, because that thought came into my head like literally 20 minutes ago. And I'm like thinking to myself about like speakers that come to your thing. And I was going to ask that question, like, do you have speakers that come there? So it's so weird that you even asked that question. So that's a weird coincidence right there, you know?
I might fly you to Florida or California too. So,
Hey, you know? I'd be willing to do whatever you'd like, Bob, because honestly, if I love helping people and to get to talk about this stuff and talk about this experience, it truly is fascinating to me. And also, I believe it can help so many people, especially, like I said, what you're doing with these grief retreats and the positive impact that you're seeing on these people that are coming there one minute being so depressed and then leaving smiling and totally a different person. That is something that you can't, that's something you can't put money on. You know what I mean?
That's amazing work.
I feel that way. And I don't have to tell you, because I mean, you've been to the other side, but, you know, like having your life blown apart, I mean, you know, all the material stuff really didn't matter to me anymore. So there was nothing that brought me any joy. And, you know, as I say this, I mean, I could just think to where I was 23 years ago, but, you know, the only thing that brought me any comfort, you know, was helping other people. And I used to like, when people said that, you know, like,
yeah, me too.
You know, but it was really true. You know, it's the only thing that it was really for my own benefit, you know, because it made me feel better, you know.
Yeah.
That's how our lives change, you know. And so we're
absolutely.
I think that we live under this false, impression, this false illusion of permanence. We think that everything's going to be here, you know, tomorrow. And that's caustic to our lives because, well, we'll do that tomorrow. You know, we'll do this some other time. We'll, you know, I'll help this person then. I'll say this to them. That, you know, but that's why I encourage.
I love you then.
Yeah, you know, I mean, say it now, you know, because
that's
I tell you what, Bob,
since I came back, that's one thing that I do. I tell every single one of my friends before we hang up off the phone or anything, every single person, I tell them I love them because when I lost my father in 2020, I got the chance, luckily, to talk to him 2 minutes before he passed away. He called me up and told me he loved me nonstop, and I didn't understand why he was doing it. And it was a very weird thing of him to do that because he wasn't really that type of person. And then 2 minutes later, they found him clenching the phone to his chest and he ended up passing away. And unfortunately, when they saved him, it was too late. I had to take him off life support because he was brain dead, unfortunately. But he had a heart attack and we lost him. But I tell you, I was lucky that I got to say I love you to him. So now I make sure that since my experiences, I make sure to always tell everybody that it's important that you let the people know that you love them and spend as much time as you can with the ones you love because tomorrow is not promised.
Exactly. The only good thing is that you really have a second chance because, you know, love and compassion are the conduits by which communication takes place. Really, that's what I think.
So, you know,
if you had that love bond, even if you didn't get a chance to express it, it still exists.
Oh, 100%.
And it's tangible, you know. And the person, you know, on the other side, you know, feels it. You know, we're all essentially beings of empathy, you know. I mean, some more than others, but.
Now tell us a little bit about your blog, please.
Well, the blog, I just use it so my head doesn't explode and I get to, it's not connected to the foundation, but you know, all the thoughts that come to mind. I mean, I'll write essays about it and, you know, in my blog about some of the stuff we're talking about. I mean, I wrote two books. One of them is about mediumship after working with mediums for 20 years called The Medium Explosion. The title comes from there being a medium on just about on every street corner now. And, you know, anybody could become a medium. There are no licensing requirements. There are no proficiency exams. There's no continuing education. There's no monitoring. So it's becoming, you know, problematic. And the other, you know, my other book is, I've lived a lot of years. My life's pretty interesting. So it's called My Life, but there's a twist, you know, here and there. I won't give away the twist, but it has to do with the afterlife as well.
And can you get those books on Amazon or what do you buy those books at?
Yeah, they're all on
your website.
My website or Amazon is good.
Okay.
Right. And speaking of the mediums, I wanted to know just a little bit how you certify them. I mean, you don't got to go into detail, but just
It's a kind of an involved process. I mean, they come to us, there are instructions on the website. They send us an email. I send them a series of questions, just 4 questions, just to try to identify where they're at and if there are any like red flags. Then if that looks okay, give them access to an application online. It's a pretty extensive, like 7-page application.
Oh no, absolutely.
For every 10 mediums I give access to, maybe one sends it back because they think they're gonna like send us $100 and I'm gonna send them a certificate, like a mail order.
Something to hang on their wall to say I'm certified.
And then they say that's not gonna happen. There's an interview. And then, you know, the actual process, when if they get to that point, they do a series of 5 readings for 5 different sitters that we trained in scoring. When I say trained, they know about mediumship. They know what constitutes evidence versus, you know, general stuff.
Cold reading and stuff like that.
And we give a lot more weight to something that's specific in nature. You know? So if I'm reading you, Chris, and you're the medium. I mean, if you're reading me, you're the medium. You see approximately how old I am, and you say, Bob, you have a grandmother in spirit. You know, shit, yeah, should be 120. But if you say to me, I have your grandmother Rebecca here, and my grandmother's name was Rebecca, and that you couldn't have researched any place, right, think you'd agree that should be given more weight than just saying I have a grandmother in spirit.
Exactly. So, she used to make a pork sandwich every Sunday afternoon, you know?
Yeah, right.
Whatever,
right.
Yeah.
So, and then we have five different scoring methods, and they have to meet the minimum guidelines in each of the five. So it's somebody without that's not gifted in this is never going to, you know, gain certification, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's very important what you do with that, because that certification process has to be extensive, because like we talked earlier, you know, there are so many people out there that now say that they're mediums because of how big the paranormal is, that really are just scamming people. And it's sad that I see this, you know, they learn these tricks of cold readings, and then people get tricked, and then they end up paying $300, $400 for a medium. And, you know, the medium that I work with, she does everything for free because she says that she doesn't believe that spirit would like the fact of her being charging somebody, even though her husband's like, we want to make it, we should make a business out of this. She was like, no, I do this for spirit only. I will not do this for money. I do this for family, for grief. The spirit told me this is what to do. And that was one of the reasons why I started working with her. So what I did, I put her through a test date like you did. I picked four random people online, and one of them hidden inside of it was one of my cousins. And I didn't tell her anything but the first name and what time she had to log into the StreamYard. And then they would meet. She would just know the first name. That's it. And then all of a sudden she'd do a reading. And she left all four people, even my cousin, in tears. And I was so shocked about it because she hit on every single thing with these people. And they actually came to me and they were like, there's no way she could have known that you told her stuff about us. I'm like, I don't even know you. I don't even know you. How could I tell her, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, the difficult thing, which has always been a problem, we do the best we can, but there's a difference between, I know it's a common thing to say that all mediums are psychic, but not all, you know, psychics are mediums. So there is a difference between mind-to-mind communication between two living people, you know, telepathy, reading somebody's energy, and so forth. And mediumship is telepathy, except that one person no longer has a physical body, but they still have a mind. So I realize that mediumship is still telepathy. But there are people that are very, very good at telling you things that have happened to you in your own life.
Yeah.
But they're really not so good at communicating with a discarnate source. So in other words, like what I train my sitters, I say, look, let's say if the medium comes to you and says, it's not talking about anybody in spirit, but says that, hey, I see that you just painted your bedroom pink. And let's say you just did paint your bedroom pink. I mean, that's an amazing piece of information.
Yeah.
It doesn't show that we survive physical death because when spirit is giving you that. On the other hand, if you're bringing through my deceased mom and you give me all this evidence about mom and you say, but by the way, mom's telling me that she likes that you just painted your bedroom, you know, pink. Well, that's mediumistic because you've already established the evidence. So in other words, psychic information has to be, for our purposes, has to be tied to a source. You know,
let's get information. Yep. Absolutely. No, absolutely. Totally. I totally agree with that. That is totally fascinating. I mean, I love the work you're doing, Bob, and I look forward to speaking with you after this.
That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. I would love to have you on again and talk more about this, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure, anytime. It was my pleasure being here.
Yeah, thank you so
much.
Thank
you very much.
So if you want to just wait and back for a sec, I definitely want to talk to you for sure. So, okay. But thank you so much, Bob, for coming on. Everybody, thank you so much, and we'll see you in a minute. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Wow, man. I tell you,
that was amazing.
Dude, such an amazing episode. I want to keep going too. And I'm like, you know what? I was like, I didn't want to take too much of his time out of his hands. I know we normally go for an hour. So I can't believe the hour came so quick, though.
That was quick. That seems like boom, boom.
I tell you. But you know what? The research that he is doing, everyone, you guys need to go check it out. You need to go to the Forever Family Foundation.org, right on the bottom right here. Robert Gisbert, I'm telling you, he's an amazing person, as you just found out if you watched this episode. If you didn't, please go back and watch it. He has a lot of knowledge in this. Like I said, he was on the docuseries Surviving Death on Netflix. Check it out on episode 4. And he does these amazing grief retreats in Connecticut, Florida, and California, which he spoke about on this episode. If you didn't get a chance to see it, definitely go back and check out it. And also follow us on Spotify and all the major podcast listening platforms. And everybody, thank you so much for tuning in and commenting thank in this you. And everything. But Chris, man, what did you think, man?
I mean, it was just amazing. It was just helping people and
yeah,
grief, just everything. It's just, my mind's just like right now.
No, it's I know.
You amazing know, source. It, and even hearing your story about your near death, even I hadn't heard that ever. And so that was amazing.
It's funny because I try not to talk about my near death stuff on this show because I like that. Right. Our guests, I like that. It's about our guests, you know? And, but I love to share it when I can, when somebody asks me about it, because in the beginning, I never wanted to talk about it because I felt like I was crazy. I really did.
Yeah.
And
no,
I was like,
no.
Because people look at you like you're crazy back in the day when you talk about paranormal stuff. So I was always scared I was going to get locked up in a mental institution if I started talking about it, you know?
Right.
But when I finally, felt comfortable enough and I started to actually talk about it with everybody, the way that it helped people, like what Bob is doing is absolutely amazing. So it's just, I can't wait to, hopefully hook up with him and see what else he does and how much he helps people. And I just think it's absolutely amazing. So everyone, please go check out the Forever Family Foundation.org. Yes. And check out some of these retreats. If you guys have lost anybody or are looking for a grief retreat, an amazing one with mediums and science and everything behind it, definitely check it out. And also check out his blog
at Beyond. And I love the way he blends science and everything through that. So
absolutely, man. Absolutely. Well, guys, thank you so much for tuning in again. I'm AJ Capasso, host of Talking with the Source. I'm here with my other host, Sir Chris. What's good, brother? Everyone, have a great night. Thank you for tuning in.
Spirit fingers.
Spirit fingers.